Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
And welcome again to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 345, being recorded on September 9th. Today we're going to be talking about, we've got some special guests on from the Barracuda team. We're going to be talking about the their SD-WAN product. So before we do that, I've got Kale's here, Sajit's here, Kendall's here, and Cynthia's here. Folks, looks like we got a couple of announcements. Who wants to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I got two things. One is there's some new cost allocation features that are in preview in the portal. So we'll drop a link in the show notes for this, but this is kind of interesting, especially if you're trying to basically allocate the spend of like what's happening inside your Azure account, particularly for like an EA account or a MCA. But basically looking at, you know, how you can basically like set that up and basically show these different splits between like who used what resources, especially when there's like shared things that are happening there. So this is a new preview feature. Go check it out. It actually, like, once you set all this stuff up, it shows it out in the cost allocation when you go look at it. So pretty interesting things for keeping track of your spend in Azure. The second piece was around the Azure Redis cache. There's a VS Code extension that's been created for this now, which is pretty slick. Basically, you can download this extension. It'll allow you to basically view Redis, you know, instances that you've deployed out there. You can do some testing and debugging against those caches. So kind of a neat thing. If you're into Visual Studio Code, go check it out. There's a marketplace link, and you can basically download that if you're using Redis and you want to work with that from inside your IDE.
Oh, good. That means I don't have to remember all the Redis commands anymore now.
That's right. GUIs. We love them.
Cool. Who's next?
I can go next. There's also automatic virtual machine guest patching. It is now in public preview, another thing that you don't really have to worry about anymore. What automatic VM guest patching allows you to do is that for any of the critical or security patches, they can be automatically downloaded and applied to the VMs. It also does all the reboot as necessary. It ensures that it's done during off-peak hours for whichever time zones the VMs are in, which I think is really helpful that it pointed that one out, because I think right now everyone is working in companies that are multinationals, and it's important to really follow whichever time zones those VMs are deployed in. And there's also additional principles that they follow to ensure that you still have availability as the patches are getting installed. And one caveat amongst them all is that this is a setting that you can only set when the VM is first created. So right now, if you are set for the VMs to update manually, you won't be able to change that. So just also wanted to point that out. And in terms of orchestration modes, there are two. One is by the platform, which it disables the Windows updates on the virtual machine and uses Azure as the orchestration. And then the other one is just using the Windows server itself to run the updates.
This is cool. Oh, sorry.
And you can't change between those two modes I just talked about, but you just can't go from manual to some sort of automated fashion.
This is what I was going to say is this is actually cool, because this is sort of like we've had Windows Update for a long time, and it's a key, you know, key part of keeping the ecosystem healthy. But this is layering, sort of adding cloud smarts on top of that. Now you have, you talk about sort of honoring business location and some business rules and all this orchestration, right? And that's really where the cloud goodness comes in, right? Because you can sort of, you layer in this additional level of management and capabilities. And I'm sure there's some dashboards that come with it, right? Here's all my patched VMs and all that kind of stuff. That's really cool. Anybody else? Kendall, looks like you got a couple of things out here.
Yeah.
More AKS stuff. Really, Kendall?
I know, I'm sorry. So I know that I announced this on the last call. I'm sorry that I'm using this as a shameless plug, but I know that I mentioned this on our previous episode, but the Global Black Belt team is hosting an external AKS office hours. So the goal of that is going to be to kind of cover some of the hot topics on AKS. The first one that we're doing is going to be on private clusters, but it's also going to be an opportunity for us to cover just general AKS updates, cloud native ecosystem updates related to Kubernetes, and then do an open Q&A for customers. So as mentioned on the previous call, the first one's actually going to be on September 10th at 11 o'clock CST, and that'll be biweekly. So it'll happen every other Thursday. And if you want more information on that, you can go to aka.ms/AKS public office hours. So I'll post the link to that. And then, and also, you know, that's open to anybody, especially to customers that are using AKS. And eventually we would love for customers to actually come on to the office hours and talk about things that they're doing on Kubernetes on Azure. So definitely get excited about that. And then the second update that I had was that Visual Studio Code Spaces is basically consolidating into GitHub Code Spaces. So I believe they were kind of running these two things in parallel. So they had the public preview of VS Code Spaces, which was kind of the cloud powered development environment vision for Visual Studio. And then basically kind of had done something similar on the GitHub side where you could do, you know, remote development kind of using GitHub as the platform. And so now they're kind of consolidating those two things, because even though they had similar functionality, I think people were getting a bit confused. And to be honest, I don't know exactly what that transition process will look like, but definitely read up on that. I'll put the link in the show notes for everyone to check out. But basically the Azure offering that exists now will be retired in February 2021, and the GitHub Codespaces is going to be the de facto kind of platform for code spaces moving forward.
Cool. Excellent. So more indications, right, that GitHub is going to continue to sit around, right? It's not going anywhere anytime soon. So given that, so at this point, why don't we, Michael, we've got Michael Zollner here from Barracuda. We had Reshma Yennapalli on, a couple of weeks back talking about Azure's SD-WAN, VWAN product, and Barracuda plugs into that. So I swear we didn't like intentionally plan this. It just works out really well that, these end up coming closely. But Michael, if you could, introduce yourself and tell us what you do for Barracuda, and then tell us what's so cool about your new SD-WAN stuff.
Yeah. So hi, my name is Michael Zoller. I'm the product manager for Barracuda Cloud Gen 1, which is what we're calling our secure SD-WAN product that we're basing on Virtual WAN. And yeah, I think we've been keeping busy for the past year and a half, and together with the Virtual WAN team, we have developed a product that essentially brings a full secure SD-WAN feature stack to Virtual WAN. So I think that is something that the customers have been asking for, and the team approached us, like I said, about a year and a half ago, if that is something we would be interested in. And in July at Inspire, we launched a solution. And I think to explain the solution and why you really need SD-WAN and what the difference is, I think it's good to understand what SD-WAN is first, right? So SD-WAN is if you have a site and you have an ISP, so it's all about connectivity. It's about being connected to the cloud. So if you have one line that goes up to the cloud, that's basically all you have. If that line goes down, then you're out of luck. You're offline. You can, of course, buy a second line. And then you need to figure out the logic of how applications get there, how your traffic gets there when one of them's down. And now you have two and you probably want to use two. And SD-WAN is essentially the feature that allows you to use both lines at the optimal way. It adds intelligence to how you connect your site to the cloud. And part of what makes this technology not always so easy to handle is you always need to handle both sides of the story. So you need a cloud component, like component at the end, which is our SD-WAN gateways that we run inside of Virtual WAN. And you need the site devices. So that is hardware CPE, or a VM that is sitting at the customer site. And those two together, they are what allows you to have that connectivity framework that we developed with Barracuda Cloud Gen 1. So, and I think the neat thing about our solution, because there are other solutions out there that do SD-WAN, is really the unique integration we have into Virtual One. Because right now, we are the only ones that can deploy our SD-WAN solution into the Virtual One hub. So that means we can connect to not only the cloud resources there, but we can also leverage all those features that Reshmi talked about in the podcast from Virtual One. So we can go over the global backbone. You can set this up as a global WAN backbone that is based off of Azure and really connects you into all the resources and applications that you've hosted there, while replacing like something like an MPLS on the way as well.
Sorry, go ahead, Sajid.
No, I wanted some clarification from Michael in terms of like what is the function of these of the component that is sitting on-prem. You mentioned that there is a server of some sort that's obviously running some software, and that's talking to the part that's in Azure. So. Is the routing, is the data actually flowing between these two, or is that just like some sort of controller?
Well, it does two things for us. So first of all, it is our VPN endpoint at the site. So it does the SD-WAN and the VPN. And the second thing it does for us, seeing how we have a secure SD-WAN service, it also does next-gen firewall security. So think of stuff like ACLs and deep packet level inspection, malware protection, URL filtering, like you know that the whole standard next-gen firewall security feature set. So it's really a combination of having a secure edge device that can enforce security, plus having the SD-WAN logic both in the cloud and on the edge.
I know SD stands for software defined. Yeah. What is it as opposed to?
It's like you just dropped the SD, so it's not software defined anymore. It's just a wide area network. So what is that? So that would be if you connected your global sites or even your regional sites via MPLS. So you go to your telco and you purchase an MPLS line Yeah, then you simply hook that up to a router in one location and to the other location. But what we're finding, and that's what we're seeing also with the customers, that a lot of companies really want to get out of the restrictions that a global MPLS setup gives them. It's very hard to scale it up or scale it down or to be more dynamic with it. So I think that is something when you combine an SD-WAN vendor, but it's very easy to get an internet line, that is just local, and the global backbone from Microsoft, that means you can go up and you can resize that gateway, and very quickly you can go from 1 gigabit to 40 gigabit, and that's like 20 minutes right there. In the old world, that took 6+ months, and depending on where you wanted that MPLS to terminate, that could tell you it's not possible at all.
So when I think about sort of what y'all are offering, and I put this in context of, you know, when Reshmi came in and talked about WAN, right? The complexity with the WAN, and I think you alluded to this earlier, Michael, is managing it is tough, right? There's there's a lot of hardware involved, and there's, you know, configuring it, and if you misconfigure it, now you can't connect. What y'all are doing is sort of elevating that to you're defining sort of your business roles. What do I want allowed? What do I not want allowed? You know, who do I want to be able to connect? And you're handling all that complexity for the customers underneath that. You know, at the end of the day, networking is still networking. There have to be routes advertised. There have to be all that done. But you're taking a human being out of sort of that direct configuration level. And, you know, your product is helping them manage that without having to know and understand all of that complexity. Yeah. Is that the right way to think about this?
Yeah, so we really, there's, for example, routing. If you just want to have sites connected, you don't have to know anything about it. We really take care of everything. We went to great lengths to make sure that setting it up is as easy as humanly possible. So, of course, there's not nothing. You're always going to have to enter what your credentials for your ISPs are and stuff like that. But the whole complexity of the SD-WAN setup, we really took most of that away. So for example, when you set up one of those sites, you don't need a skilled technician on site. We use something called zero touch deployment. So that means you order your hardware box or your VM token from Barracuda. And before that is even shipped out, you can go in your portal, configure it, and you just need somebody on site to plug in the network cable and give it power. The rest, like setting up the tunnels, doing security, doing the routing, just getting connected, all that is handled automatically by us.
Well, that's cool. So let me make sure I understood that. So I can ship Sajid one of these, and then he just has to stand there and plug everything in, but I basically own his network at that point. I can configure it and manage it for him. I mean, you know, a little bit overstated, but conceptually, I mean, that like zero touch is really nice. It's the same concept we treat computing these days is I don't care about power or network. I just spin up a VM. Now you're saying as long as there's somebody there to plug in the wires, which a human being has to do, everything else you can manage for the customer, right? They just take their config and you're pushing it to that device.
Yeah, exactly. And it does extend also from there. So we had earlier about installing patches on VMs. We have something very, very similar. So firmware and security updates and all that, we handle those automatically as well. And yes, we did think about the time zones and all of that. So
I was going to ask you, though, what is the failover story here? Like, obviously, in hardware goes bad on-prem. And so do you have multiple copies of it?
It's actually very easy. If you're afraid that one goes bad, you'll just use two. So there's an HA cluster you can do at the edge. And one of those will always be active. And it's the same for firmware. You know, when firmware update or security hotfix is installed, it'll always be the passive box that's installed first. We fail over, and that is transparent for VPN traffic, by the way. So you would not notice, even if you would do a voice over IP call over these VPN tunnels, over these multi-transport VPN tunnels, failing over, you would not notice it. In the hub, it's of course also redundant. There, it's a bit different from just the way it's set up, as all the components are normally active to provide the performance that you're paying for. But firmware updates, we will fail over all sites connecting to the unit that's not being updated, and then do the whole thing back again. So again, trying to make it easy for the customer, trying to make sure everybody stays up to date, stays secure. Really trying to keep it simple.
And what's the integration now? So it's obviously integrated with the virtual WAN, right, mm-hmm. service. And so they both go hand in hand. Is there like a uniform single pane of glass kind of view somewhere of everything?
Yeah, so there's two ways to manage and to deploy this. And then the first one is there's the deployment side, which is strictly an Azure portal. So to deploy a gateway to add our solution to the hub, you would go into VirtualBahn, open up a hub, and there's a thing that says add a third-party appliance, and of course, go in, select Barracuda, which will kick you to a marketplace listing. All you have to do to install a gateway is you tell us how fast you want it and then to which hub, and we ask for a small token that you get from our web UI for us to be able to associate that gateway with you. So we don't need a service principal, so we don't have any type of access into the customer's account, which I think is a good thing. And then there's a cloud management portal 20 minutes after you kicked off the gateway, it's live, and then you can connect sites to it. And that's really as easy as it is.
So I got to ask, although we are absolutely Azure-centric here, right? We do recognize that there are other clouds in the world. Is this an Azure only solution, or maybe it's optimized? Or it's like, what is this, a multi cloud solution for customers as well?
Yeah, we did launch this as an Azure only solution. So right now, really, Azure is the focus of our world. Yeah,
it's not a bad thing. We just do it, you know. But okay, so cool. No, that's a great combination of capabilities.
Sorry, go ahead, Evan.
No, go ahead, Sajid.
I was going to ask, Evans used to be like in a support role. So I'm trying to wonder, like, what is the support story here? Like, you know, when one of these boxes goes down, how do you guys, you know, dip into it remotely and see what's going on? Like, what's the What does that story look like?
Yeah, so that is actually just like the development of the solution, because like our gateways, they run in Microsoft accounts inside a Microsoft service. So there is an agreement in place between Barracuda and Microsoft that we will work those support cases together. So if it's Barracuda tech that's causing an issue, the Microsoft support can give access to the Barracuda support, and then we can work the case together. Because actually, we're so closely intertwined in most of these that I don't think a customer, when he opens a case, whether it's with Barracuda or with Microsoft, will know which party is actually at fault, and that would have to be investigated.
Is the SD-WAN something you can migrate into, or is that something that you kind of decide on the get-go that this is what you want to use, and then you design your networking or your application around it?
Well, SD-WAN is, you can also think of it like a very fancy SD-WAN tunnel that just uses all the lines you have got and puts some intelligence on top of that. But to use it with our solution, it's of course, it's designed in. So there's no way not to use SD-WAN, as that's simply what we focus on. So you always need, like I said before, you need the device on the customer side, on the site, and the device on the cloud part. So you really need to decide to start using SD-WAN. But you can start deploying it next to, for example, an existing MPLS line or express route or something like that, and then flip over to just SD-WAN if you need it, or keep it parallel, depending on how you wanted to do it things.
So when a customer, I guess thinking about putting myself in a customer's shoes, mm-hmm. You know, obviously everybody wants to reduce the complexity right of their edge. What tells me, and maybe you answered this earlier when you say when you go to two sites, right? What tells me that now is sort of my time to graduate or move up to your SD-WAN solution, right? Versus just sort of the way that I was doing it before? Or is the short answer, everybody should be looking at this, right? This is...
Of course, everybody should be looking at this. But yeah, in the end, for the customers that we've been working with, cost has been a big factor. Simply getting the flexibility and getting that big bill that they have for regional MPLS lines. We're working with one big security provider out of Europe who connected 100 sites, and they are saving a lot of money by going down the SD-WAN route. And the second one is simply ease of use. I think this is the easiest way to get into SD-WAN that's out there right now. And that is partially just because VirtualWAN offers a platform with the backbone, with the way it is set up, with the routing that allows you just to dynamically add and remove resources as needed. And we can learn those networks from the routing service. So I think it's a combination of having like the robust connectivity, because, you know, when everything is in the cloud, staying connected now is more important than it used to be when you had the servers in the closet next door. And I think that it's the combination of those things that really make our service also unique compared to some of the other offerings that are out there.
So where do you see, like, what's sort of the next... Not the next step, because maybe that sort of implies, you know, but like where do you see this going? I mean, do you just see, is it just that people do more and more distributed connections? I mean, is there, obviously, you know, we'll take product announcements if you want to give them here, but we, you know, remember we are a public, you know, forum, but
that's fine.
Where do you see the product going? Where do you see it evolving? Like what's sort of the vision?
Yeah, I think it's the natural progression that right now, if you think about that, we connect sites. That it's the natural progression to connect users next, and keep up the connectivity to really make sure, depending on what use case you have and what you want, even going down to connecting things. So we also offer ruggedized appliances. So if you have some industrial applications you want connected up to Azure, that is also one of the things. So solving the connectivity problem and applying security to that same thing, and having like one central security policy that's just rolled out without you having to configure four or five different services and each site separately. I think that is really what's powerful.
Again, back to me shipping Sajid a device is for.
that's great, Michael. Thanks. This has been a really good introduction into the Barracuda SD-WAN. I'm sure you know, it's nice. It goes well with the our Azure service. I'm glad to hear that it's Azure First Party. That you guys done it for Azure First. So really good to hear that. All right.
Someone is at the front door.
Oops, looks like someone's at the front door.
I thought that was a new Teams feature. Like 1 minute left, you get a nice doorbell ring.
That's excellent. That's somebody at Sajid's edge. Good thing hopefully he's got a good firewall in place. This is great. Michael, thanks for coming on. Any sort of last words or last things that you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, so basically if this is something that interests you, do get in touch. Definitely, I think we can send you guys some links to put in the show notes, and happy to talk to you about what the SD1 can do for you.
Great. We will definitely we'll get your links and we'll put them in the show notes. And yeah, hopefully it's good for both companies right at that point. So it sounds like a great next step. Thanks, folks. Appreciate everybody. We will talk next week.
Thanks, guys, for coming.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org. Under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.